University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, from the Department of Philosophy, you're wearing your Plato's Cave t-shirt today.
I am.
Very cool. It's Professor Beth Oljar.
Good to be here.
Excellent. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. It's Friday.
Yep.
That's always a good place to be. I'm going out to dinner tonight. So
where are you going?
Oh, Sam's Ferndale Grill.
But that's supposed to be a good place.
We love it. And whenever Drew and I go in there now, they're like, okay, we'll bring you Diet Cokes. You know, we always order the same thing. So it's the sort of being greeted as regulars, which is totally cool.
Every time I drive past there, I think of you. I'm not joking. They always have the best Christmas decorations. Seriously.
And they had a black Santa. At Christmas.
Really?
I wanted to take a picture of it and fax it to Megyn Kelly at Fox News after she said, Santa Claus is white.
Last year.
Oh, bless her heart.
Oh, my. Professor Jim Tubbs is here from the Department of Religious Studies.
Good afternoon.
And
good
looking afternoon. Minty.
The poor guy.
As always.
He's in mint condition.
Sometimes lemony.
Sometimes.
Or watermelony.
Do you like the taste of mint?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
I have mint growing in my backyard,
next to his hemp.
I made the mistake of going to the Eastern Market one time and buying this little mint plant for $1, planting it in the backyard, and now it like has to be mown and cut with a scythe.
Oh, wow. It's everywhere.
It's just mutant.
But I've got all kinds of bees. The bees love the flowers that grow on the mint plants. So I've got all kinds of bees in the backyard for the
nice
mint.
Vermin.
Professor Dave Chow, what grows in your backyard?
Mold.
Yeah.
Mold.
Yeah. Not tall, in your house, your backyard.
Tall grass right about now.
Yeah, that's
way
true.
Too tall.
We have rain coming tomorrow. We got to get out there and do some cutting tonight, huh?
Can't I just get a herd of goats and be done with?
Yeah, that would make sense. Professor Diane Manica is here as well.
Yes, I am.
From the Department of checking her cell phone whenever she dang likes.
and not responding whenever I dang like.
It's for my convenience.
There is a new app called Checky that will tell you how many times you check your cell phone.
Oh, is that true?
Stephen Colbert did a story on it.
Oh,
that's how I knew that. I'm like, that is unbelievably pathetic.
Yep.
There's lots of things that these devices can do for us. This is true. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. Actually, I don't know if we've ever had a group of questions based on apps. I think that would be kind of fun.
Oh, maybe someone
put that
together.
History of apps. If you stump our panel, you're going to win one of our prizes, and you're probably going to stump our panel if you send in questions about apps. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using the handle @AskTheProfUDM or just #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter. Or you can find us on Facebook. We were just finishing up some questions when last we left our heroes from Mark Namark. Very nice set of questions about living spaces. And we're finishing up with a sort of an interesting twist here right at the end. Two terms associated with European and American territorial expansion are manifest destiny and what's called the white man's burden. The white man's burden is the title of a poem by what famous author?
Longfellow, Wordsworth?
Rudyard Kipling.
It was Kipling.
Oh, okay.
Professor Tubbs just
pulls
it right out.
Yeah, well, he lived in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
That attitude.
Yeah. Oh, in reference to what historic event was that poem published? I think we've already referenced this earlier in this set of questions. There's a subtitle of the poem that is "The United States and what?"
Westward expansion.
The acquisition of something during the Spanish-American War.
Oh, Philippines.
Philippines would have been up Rudyard Kipling's
civilizing the savages.
More particularly, the resistance to American conquest, which ended up becoming the Philippine-American War. So, you know, that's wonderful. In what magazine was this poem published? How interesting. How would we know this?
What magazine?
Harper's Weekly.
I mean, it's a good place to start. It was the one at that time. It called McClure's is what it was published in.
Is it but Troy?
Very similar sort of thing. With regard to Manifest Destiny, to what part of the country does the cry 5440 or fight refer to?
My part.
Which is?
The Pacific Northwest.
Yes, Oregon, occupied jointly by the U.S. and the U.K. Absolutists for continentalism wanted the U.S. to annex the entire territory, which in the end was divided by the 1846 Oregon Treaty by the 49th parallel, which defined much of the border between British North America and the United States, soon to be the U.S. and Canada.
That's there it. I said we just take Scotland, be done with.
Oh, they clearly do not want to be taken.
How did the vote turn out? I hadn't heard.
They voted by 10 points to remain in the UK.
Okay. Yes.
Please stay. I know David Cameron was like begging them. Please stay.
There were a lot of people begging.
Yes. It's interesting. It's just something they got to get out of their system every couple hundred years.
A lot of people were worried about what was going to happen to England and Wales if they left.
The Welsh are going to be next. There's a fair number of Welsh nationalists, I think.
There are, but I don't think they want to leave because of the economic stability this brings them.
Right.
But the other concern was, you know, Scotland provides the more, shall we say, progressive aspect of UK politics.
That's true. If they left.
That's
true.
And they've allowed women now to be members of St. Andrew Golf Course.
Yeah.
That just happened.
Yep. That just happened
this week. That just happened,
too. Wow.
Yeah, that is a wow.
The royal and ancient.
Royal and ancient. In that order. Scotland has done this multiple times over the last 50 years. It's just that this one really had a high media profile. They, like I said, have to do it every few years to shake it out of their system. We have another wonderful set of questions sent in to us near the middle of August from Kimberly Richard. So we're glad to bring those questions back. We know Kimberly always puts together a slam bang potpourri of craziness. And looking where we're starting here, it's going to be fun. What World War II Allied offensive was given the whimsical code name Chattanooga Choo Choo? Don't have to think too hard about what it refers to. That much is true.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
So I think history has told us, please don't quote me on this, you guys know more about World War II than I do, there's no question, that there were some pockets of understanding what was coming on D-Day. So there was a possibility of fortification that Germany was going to engage in. Yeah. Chattanooga Choo Choo was going to stop that, not surprisingly, by doing what?
So was this the parachuting the people in, the resistance fighters in earlier, or the actually parachute troops in to meet up with the resistance
That's
fighters?
That's not what it says here. It says May 1944, Allied air attacks on railroads to stop them from bringing in supplies and munitions.
Gotcha. Okay.
In front of D-Day.
Well, it made sense that it's some sort of attack on a train.
Chattanooga choo-choo.
Carpet bombing.
What designer introduced the miniskirt in 1965? What was her name?
It's like not Mary Quant.
Mary Quant, yes. Okay. And for the record, because it says it here on September 1st, not too long ago, 1965, Quant debuted the miniskirt, which was not named for its size, but after her favorite car, the Mini.
The Austin Mini.
Sure, glad she didn't name like the
Which Edsel. Was one of the most difficult vehicles to get in wearing a miniskirt.
So it worked out really well.
Or getting out of, too.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. What baseball legend holds the record for highest on-base percentage in Major League Baseball history with an on-base percentage of .482? That is almost half the time he is on base. No, the answer is not Don Kelly. I'm sorry.
Darn. It's not Ryan Rayburn. We know that.
It's definitely not Ryan Rayburn. Poor guy.
Is it a modern era baseball player?
You could say that.
Carl Yastrzemski.
I'm trying to think about anything other than the fact that there was just all sorts of intimations that certain parts of this slugger's body are still frozen, awaiting reanimation.
Ted Williams. Ted Frosty Williams.
Even Babe Ruth himself with .474 and John McGraw .466. So way off. Wow. Way off. .482. That's incredible. The name of what Greek goddess is an anagram of her mother's name? This is a great question. I love Greek myths. This is a good way to put it.
I don't know. Athena has a lot of vowels in it.
Persephone?
No. That's. I think you guys need to think simpler.
Wonder Woman. No, too simple.
It was actually the queen of all the gods and goddesses.
Hera,
whose mother was?
Rhea,
exactly.
Hera.
Absolutely. What emergency use was made of coconut water by British and Japanese medics during World War II?
Like an astringent or antiseptic?
You know, it wasn't anything like that.
Like fuel? oil or something like that?
It's very careful to point out the question that coconut milk, which a lot of people confuse for the liquid inside a coconut, is actually mashed up coconut meat. So that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about the water that's inside.
Oh, like a battery acid or something like that?
No, possibly? I like the way you think, very mechanically.
Yeah, I would think wound cleansing or something. But
makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It's very close to straight up saline, which is just a weak salt solution. You can actually...
Like clean your contacts with it?
No. No, go another step. It mingles well with human plasma. It can actually be intravenously delivered to rehydrate a patient.
Wow.
That's insane.
That makes sense.
So what's your blood type?
Coconut milk IV? Sure.
Coconut water.
Oh, well, I just said milk. Yeah. Coconut water.
I feel a little thatchy. Oh.
It's clogging.
You smell so tropical today.
I feel limey.
Oh, my gosh.
Put a little umbrella in me.
What popular fruit was declared a vegetable in a unanimous, historic 1893 U.S. Supreme Court decision? Jeez.
Tomato?
The tomato. Oh, yes.
Or tomato.
The High Court reasoned...
Nix v. Hedden, or...
That while tomatoes are botanically classified as fruit, this is true, they are seeds surrounded by soft flesh. Mm-hmm. They are, quote, generally served at dinner with or after soup, fish, or meats, which constitute the principal part of the repast, and not like fruits as desserts.
Now, why would they spend all their time on this?
This must have been the basis for the Reagan administration's determination that tomato ketchup was a vegetable.
Well, and you know what? Based on the conversation we had long before we started recording our shows this week, it will not surprise you to learn that the ruling was handed down in a lawsuit brought by fruit importers who claimed their tomatoes had been unfairly subjected to a 10% tariff.
Do they give the case?
It doesn't say the name, but we'll try to look it up in the break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
This set of questions comes from Amy DeSantis. And she writes, I've decided to take pity on you and send you more questions. Harry Truman once said that if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. So I've decided...
It didn't work for me.
You mean Buddy.
I got Buddy.
That's right. You're probably sleeping with Buddy right now.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
I'm sorry. Hillary's mad at me.
So these are questions about the first dogs, as Amy calls them. What American president is considered the father of the American foxhound?
I have sex with that foxhound.
I don't think you should share that.
Washington.
That's right. No. He crossed the staghounds given to him by the Marquis de Lafayette with his own smaller black and tan Virginia hounds, creating the American foxhound.
I'll be darned.
Roof.
He did this, but the guy couldn't seem to win a battle.
Well, he's too busy taking pictures of these dogs fooling around. You know?
And we are back with some great questions, as always, from Kimberly Richards. Thank you so much for sending them in. 10% import tax on vegetables. Well, what if we classify tomato as a vegetable?
I had fried green tomatoes last night as an appetizer.
It's a fourth meal. Yeah. It's a fourth meal.
Fourth meal.
Like the good stuff
Taco Bell.
That you are.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're into fall, Dave, so fourth meal disappears.
It's cornmeal batter.
What is a young frog called when it grows out of the tadpole stage but is not yet reached what's called an adult?
Squishy.
Not a newt. Did you say squishy?
Squishy. Oh, no. That's something you get at the Quickie Mart. Oh, what are they called?
Don't think too hard.
Little frog?
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you. They're called froglets.
Froglets.
Yeah, a little froglet. That sounds like a good name for a band or an app, too.
You know, I'm expecting to get the new Captain America movie in... on Netflix today in the mail, and so when Drew and I decided
you haven't seen it yet?
No.
Okay.
When Drew and I decided to go out to dinner, he's like, you're telling me I get a bacon and cheese omelet and Captain America on Friday?
Wow. You lucky devil.
You're awesome.
Boss. What role did an Australian beach play in the design of the very first iMac? Wow.
Oh, the shape of it?
Not the shape, although that was, I mean, we're talking the to a design shell. Guy here. Not the shell. You're thinking about it. You're on the right track.
The color.
It was the color. The water at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia was the inspiration for the first color for the Mac, which was Bondi Blue. Mm. Introduced in 1998, it marked the first time any color of that type was used for a home computer. That's true. Remember, they all came in all these wonderful colors. And
beige.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I noticed I do come into work a little bit early, and I had to
Remember?
I looped around Northern Woodward in the Royal Oak area, and I couldn't help but notice a short queue outside the AT&T store for today, the first day of iPhone 6. But if you see the news stories from downtown London today, they talked about an 8-hour wait.
Right.
I don't get it.
That's just wrong.
They said 11:30 yesterday. They started lining up.
Mind you, I'm a
morning 11:30.
That's almost cultish.
Almost?
All right, it is cultish. Okay.
We have a religious studies professor.
That's disturbed.
Who's your cult expert? Is it you,
John Saliba?
No, John Saliba.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
New religious movements.
I mean, I love my Mac devices, but.
Wow.
I wouldn't wait 8 hours for a new kidney. I mean,
not just that, but you were sleeping in. You probably could go this afternoon and wait for nothing.
Right. Yeah.
It's also along the same lines of those people that midnight to go see a movie. I don't understand. It's not like it gets degrades after
and they pay full price, too.
Yeah.
That's right.
For 3D.
I'm sorry, Captain America. Oh, yeah, the fourth showing. The plot changes.
Beth waits patiently at home for the mail.
Yeah. No, I normally we go to the family video that's in
by our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Woods, I didn't know that.
I told her, I said, you know, you can put these on, you can request them on Netflix, but for new releases, you're going to have to wait a while, so.
Hmm. Okay. So you guys don't do the computer streaming thing yet, huh? Like instant?
No.
Okay.
We don't.
Okay. What singer-songwriter wrote this jingle? Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Barry Manilow.
Yes. He also wrote what other famous
McDonald's,
products?
You deserve a break
today. You deserve
today.
A break today.
Yeah, but something that's a little more sticky over time in terms of sticking in your head and also sticking as a product.
Sticky as a product?
Mm-hmm.
Like some glue, adhesive?
You'll know it when I say it. It was for a first aid item.
Band-Aid?
I'm stuck on Band-Aid because Band-Aid's stuck on me. That was Barry Manilow. He won Clio Awards for good advertising in 1976. Interesting stuff.
I think that's Clio. Maybe it's
Clio.
I
was thinking Clio.
It's
Michigan.
Clio.
It shows what I know.
Where does the water?
The gold pencil.
Yeah, I mean, is this like the Oscars at CCS or what? I mean, people go into advertising from your school,
actually,
right?
The big one that people want to win is the gold pencil, actually. It's the one show.
Okay.
That's the one that people are shooting for.
Okay.
Where does the water in the Panama Canal originate? Where does it come from?
The Atlantic, doesn't it?
No, the Pacific.
Which way does it go?
Actually, it says here, to be honest, where does the water originate is what the question's asking, but water flows out of the canal, which is 100% above sea level, into both oceans.
Oh,
okay.
So it comes from someplace inland.
Like the Amazon River.
Tanganyika.
What's that lake in the middle of it?
Mm-hmm. These are tough names, but you've got the basic idea. Yeah, the Panama Canal is fed by three gigantic lakes that are inland. One starts with a G and two start with M.
Lake Guarnera or something like that.
I have Gatun.
Gatun, yeah, because the Gatun locks are just below that.
Yep. The Miraflores, as in I'm looking at flowers.
Miraflores.
And Madden, also known probably in the native as Alajuela, because Madden doesn't sound like...
All like of its lakes are obviously being fed by some sort of mountain streams or rivers.
Yes. What was the original name of Times Square in New York City? It was renamed after the New York Times on April 8th, 1904, by a proclamation of Mayor George B. McClellan, Jr., at the urging of Adolph Oakes, owner and publisher of the New York Times at that time.
Wasn't the Bowery, right? That's a different part
of
the city.
I think that's a different part of Manhattan.
Was it before?
The theater zone.
No ideas, huh? I would have guessed something Dutch, thinking maybe it was long, long ago, but I don't even think they knew.
New Holland, or
that time. Says it was called Longacre Square before it was Times Square in 1904. Acres.
Where'd that come from?
That's a good question. I think it's just sort of one of those names like Oak Street or something like that. Kind of lame if you think about it. Like Augustus Woodward naming the main drag Woodward Avenue. Well, it goes towards the woods.
Right.
It's named after you. Well, I'm the judge. I can do what I want. What Oscar-winning U.S. film had its title changed in Germany to The Urban Neurotic in Germany?
It's got to be a Woody Allen film.
Oh, yes, it was. 1977 gave us probably one of his best work.
Annie Hall.
Annie Hall, yeah.
The
Annie
Urban
Hall.
Neurotic.
The Urban Neurotic in Germany. That is not the end of the show. It's just a honk.
It was just a sound effect.
Whose likeness did First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt want carved alongside the presidential sculptures on Mount Rushmore? If you've been paying attention to the Roosevelts on PBS,
but I don't remember
great
that
documentary.
Was it Katie Stanton?
FDR?
No, but you're in hers? The wheelhouse. You're in the wheelhouse.
Let me think.
Lucretia Mott?
No.
Harriet Tubman?
No.
You said he was in the wheelhouse, so I'm...
So Washington, Frederick Jefferson, Douglas? Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt are all there. And
she
very
Franklin there, too?
Story.
We know she didn't want Sarah Delano Roosevelt. Ooh,
no.
Let's not go there.
Was it a woman?
I was a woman, yes. That's why I said Elizabeth Cady Stanton was in the wheelhouse.
Frances Perkins. First woman in the cabinet. No.
No? Something sort of obvious for maybe the late 30s. Someone who would be a good role model.
Aunt Jemima.
No.
Oh, darn.
Anne Lindbergh.
No. What if I said Silver Dollar?
Susan B. Anthony.
Susan B. Anthony. This is insane because my wife has been watching the Ken Burns, the Roosevelts on PBS. It is pretty dang fascinating.
I got a white bird on
very
DVD.
Well done.
Unbelievable. It's Ken Burns. But bills were in Congress during construction where there was still time to add Anthony to the sculpture. Hmm. But the bills died while the funding for the overall project was cut. So there was no more money and that was the end of it. So kind of sad. Way ahead of her time, Eleanor Roosevelt, by essentially decades. Which actor-actress has won the most Academy Awards?
Oh, Meryl Streep, probably.
You know, that's not what it says here.
Katharine
says
Hepburn.
Four is Katharine Hepburn, yes. Now, what did she win for?
Oh, boy. Mm. On Golden Pond?
On Golden Pond, 1982.
Something with Spencer Tracy, so Adam's Rib or Desk Set or...
None of those.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, African Queen.
No.
Wow. Wow. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, okay. 1967.
Well, that's with Spencer.
Yep. 1968 and 1933 are all that's left.
Ooh.
And I apologize if I don't know my Cary Grant or my Spencer Tracy that well, but I don't think the 1933 one is one that you're alluding to.
Oh, Lion in Winter.
Lion in Winter is 1968.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And 1933.
Two words, MG are the initials.
MG.
Name of a flower that opens right when the sun...
Morning Glory.
Morning Glory is what... Is that fitting into the motif that you mentioned? I apologize if I led you down the wrong path.
No.
In 1999, Hepburn was named by the American Film Institute the greatest female star in movie history. Four Academy Awards. I don't think you can do any better than that. What's unusual about the way a lobster flees its enemies?
It goes backwards.
Yeah. Unable to see where it's going. It swims backwards.
Takes a chance.
When threatened, the lobster faces its enemy or perceived danger and then propels itself blindly backward through the water by snapping its abdomen and powerful tail. I always like the extra deets here.
Sounds like some of my students.
Oh. They just close their eyes and hope the bad man goes away.
Hide.
Who has hosted the most Academy Awards ceremonies at 19 over 38 years?
Johnny Carson.
Bob Hope.
Oh, wow.
Billy Crystal is a very distant second. Very, very distant second. Although the number isn't given. I know he's done it at least four or five times. Which successful fast food chain was founded in Columbus, Ohio in 1969? Wendy's old-fashioned hamburger.
I knew someone who in graduate school who had been a schoolmate of Wendy, Dave Thomas's daughter.
Oh,
Wendy.
Yeah. Yes, her name was Melinda Lou, but they called her Wendy at home. It's kind of an interesting
good burgers.
Twist. Yep. And do you remember, I think we've had this here before because it's a nice piece of Americana, the second Wendy's that opened that essentially made it into a franchise chain, what special thing about fast food did that second Wendy's have that no one else had in 1971 up to that point? feel like we've had this question in the last couple of years.
Square burgers.
Kind of cool. Square burgers is a good place to start, but that's not what
French
it is.
Fries?
Not fries. No. Nope.
Chili.
A modern day something that involved a window.
Oh, drive-thru.
Drive-thru. Yes, absolutely. What crucial role did Boston's Green Dragon Tavern play in U.S. history?
That was where the Sons of Liberty used to meet.
Oh, yes. Described by Daniel Webster as the headquarters of the revolution.
Oh, darn. I kept on thinking it was like where they shot Cheers. Oh,
no. Where they sat around drinking and singing drinking songs, one of which became our national anthem.
That's right. Oh, what a nice little bit in the paper the other day about the original lyric of that tune, To Anacreon in Heaven.
Yeah, you know, when you think about what an utterly impossible to sing tune it is that our so-called national anthem has, it's no wonder that it was a drinking song.
Yeah,
that would certainly loosen one up to do so.
It is it's extremely risque if
you
read the lyrics.
For the
it's
18th century, it certainly
downright
is.
Downright symbolic.
I don't remember twerking.
The Star Spangled Banner?
Well,
no,
it had a drinking song.
It had original words before that. Yeah. That was it was actually for a fraternity type organization,
that
college
right.
organization, but it it talked about Venus entwined with Bacchus at one point. I mean, it just
much different,
very classic. Oriented.
This sounds like a Johnny Mantis type song.
It was
only less subtle,
worse.
Which artist created the painting alternately titled La Gioconda?
Mona Lisa.
Oh, no, Da Vinci.
Yes, Leonardo Da Vinci. Yes. The Italian name for the painting, La Gioconda, means jocund, so like happy or jovial, you know, literally the jocund
but
one.
But she's had such a strange and mystical smile that no one's been able to figure out whether she's really smiling or
right.
not.
For the record, it was named by Da Vinci as a pun on the feminine form of the sitter's married name, whose last name was Giocondo. So that's very interesting.
I think I'm like the only person on earth who does not particularly like that painting.
No, I don't think people like it. I think people are fascinated by it. It's like a mystery.
Well, her expression, I mean,
it's that slightly,
I don't know, do people like
constipated
it?
I remember how utterly the first time I was ever in the Louvre, how utterly underwhelming it is.
Is it about the size of a postage
huge,
stamp?
Huge, like wall-sized Rubens and Titians and stuff. And here on this little wall with a guard, you know, and at that point there was just a velvet rope around the front of it. But it's this little washed-out looking painting. It's just kind of hard to figure out what all the hype's about.
Interesting.
Of course, I remember when it came to this country aboard the France, the SS France, and they had they used a suite up the France on the top deck had a suite with an open air patio outside of it. And they did it so that if the ship sank, this floating container it was in would break loose and float on its own.
That would be where I would go if the ship
space.
Looked like it was going to... I could go look at the painting for five minutes.
Hang on tight.
Yeah, it was this big container that was quite buoyant.
Oh, my gosh. In what women's race at the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, Australia, were the three leaders disqualified within sight of the finish line? Oh, man.
That's the finish line.
For such a long time, you're going to have to wait to figure that one out. But don't worry,
marathon.
We'll be back. Someday. Professor Manica.
Someday. Adios.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Tubbs.
Have a good weekend.
Professor Olchar.
Auf Wiedersehen.
And now, these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.